What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is episode 7, and this week I have a theme, and that theme is theme parks, specifically Disneyland and Disney World, the Magic Kingdoms. I have some personal anecdotes, and then later a special guest who has spent 30 years working in the Disney organization, and he's going to give you some tips on how to maneuver your way around the Magic Kingdom. All that and much more right here on Hollywood and Levine. I grew up in L.A. I grew up with Disneyland. I've been going to Disneyland my entire life. A few personal stories. Back in the 60s, when I was a teenager and smoked a lot of dope, I would go to Disneyland with friends and get high. And there is the Abe Lincoln exhibit, you know, where you go and he stands up and does the Gettysburg Address. Well, I don't know what compelled me to do this, but right in the middle, I stood up and asked him a question. Half of the people were appalled, and the other half thought it was hilarious, but I was not thrown out of the ride. And then another time, you know how they have the Mickey Mouse Mouseketeer hats, the black hats with the Mickey Mouse ears, and they will write your name on the hat. They'll stitch it in, and you just say, my name is Ken or Ben or whatever your name is. And so I went up there and said that my name was Vincent, and then I ripped off one of the ears, walked around wearing that. And again, a few people found that very funny. Others were sort of appalled. I'm, you know, spitting on the cross. And for most people, it was like, huh? Vincent Van Gogh, that's the joke. Vincent Van Gogh. But my favorite Disneyland story happened also in the 60s when we brought my grandmother to the Magic Kingdom. And my grandmother was probably in her mid-60s back then. And she was your typical Jewish grandmother, blintzes making, house cleaning, plastic on the furniture, Jewish grandmother. And she said, look, I don't want to go on any thrill rides. I went with my grandmother and my parents and my little brother. So we're going around the park and we get to the Matterhorn. And my dad says to my grandmother, his mother, well, why don't you go on this? oh, this isn't a thrill ride. This is just a nice little toboggan ride. You'll think you're in Switzerland. It's wonderful. So she said, okay. So I get in the bobsled, and you know the way they position you in those things where I'll be sitting and then my grandmother is in my lap. And we take off on the ride, and it starts going up the center of the mountain. And about halfway up the mountain, she figures it out. She figures out that this is some kind of roller coaster. And then I hear, for the first time ever, my grandmother yell, "Fuck!" And then the ride starts, and we're whipping around down that mountain, and all she could say is, "Fuck Clifford, I'm going to kill him, I'm going to kill him, God damn it, fuck!" It was so great to hear my grandmother cursing all the way down. And I think she chased my father around the park for the rest of it. I don't think she talked to him for the next 4 years. Anyway, those are my Disneyland stories. When we come back, Greg Airbar will talk about the park and the things to do and don't when Hollywood and Levine continues after this.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are.
So, Greg, you worked for the Disney organization for like 30 years, mm-hmm. and you were in Florida most of the time. But I want to talk a little bit about the theme parks. I want to talk about Disneyland and Disney World and maybe give the listeners some tips on how to navigate them. What are good times of the year to go to either Disneyland or Disney World? Obviously, the summer is bad. Obviously, Christmas vacation is bad. But are there any windows when it's not too crowded?
It's harder now to say than it used to be. I mean, there were literally back in the day when they would say, oh, well, Tuesday is the most busy day because people travel on weekends and they really get going on Tuesday. And it was like, I wouldn't dare say, oh, you know, Tuesday. Nobody really knows for sure. A day. What I can tell you is any holiday, any 3-day weekend, it's going to be busy at all the parks, especially Disneyland and Magic Kingdom in Florida. The biggest times of the year, anytime school's out, but especially Easter. Spring break, which is tricky because spring break varies throughout the country. So you don't know where school is in or out with spring break. But surrounding Easter, very, very busy. And between the time when, as you've written often, the time when Hollywood is, and the freeways are really calm and there's hardly any cars, that's when it's the most busy in the parks.
Right, because it's usually the week between Christmas and New Year's.
It is. And they have, I don't know that Disneyland does this, but I do know Magic Kingdom will actually have to close the gate, like on New Year's Day and stuff, because the park is at capacity, and they will start letting people in as things even off. But and I've been in there because sometimes, you know, as a cast member, which is what they call it, mm-hmm. you are asked sometimes to go into the park and work shifts because they need help. And to me, it's real cool because it's like Lucy in the candy.
Well, so what do you do? You like you're Winnie the Pooh?
No.
Or you're Cinderella?
I wish.
And then you work the popcorn machine, or then you peel people off of the Indiana Jones ride.
You can work the popcorn machine. I haven't. I've worked at Pecos Bill's. I have counted turkey legs. I've counted them.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you they are sprayed with a thing called Vegeline, which
Thanks.
Keeps them lustrous mm-hmm. and also keeps them nice and fresh. It's harmless. But
okay.
I do know that. I love me a turkey leg. Oh, I love those. I feel like Barney Rubble when I have those. You know. But I have done that. I have done crowd control at Space Mountain. Literally, they'll put masking tape down, and you have to say, you know, you go there. Okay, now you guys go. I have done I've worked the food line at a buffeteria, which was a blast because I could slap food on plates and hand it to people.
Great. Just like being in the Army.
Well, some of the funnest jobs, like on New Year's Eve.
Do they have shit on a shingle? They might call it something different. Like, yeah.
Bambi's.
Yeah. Bambi's feast.
Bambi surprise. Right. The cool things are the things you wouldn't think would be. Not that all those you did, but I handed out plastic hats on New Year's Eve once and the noisemakers. And I'm like, I hand them out and I stood on a rock and was handing them out and said, come on, you know, Disney's giving you something free. Take it. And I was running out of those hats. Everybody wanted the plastic hat. And then I also worked Town Square sweeping. And you'd think that would be so boring, but no, you're doing the work of Walt because you're keeping his park clean. And then you're seeing how people aren't so slobby when you're being clean. They'll actually, oh, I'm sorry, because there's a chain reaction when people are neat. And so when you're cleaning and they see you cleaning, they're less likely to drop things into the mud and stuff. They don't want to do that. So the whole idea of Disneyland and Disney World, when you do those jobs, when you go into like the Emporium and you see those walls of plush Tiggers,
right?
They have to weave them into a wall. And I could not do that for the life of me because I would have to get the big Binno Tiggers, put them on the wall, and then you weave the arms and legs together, and I could not do it. And then this lady comes and goes, you know, things like that are an art. So anyway, but you want to see when it was crowded. You don't care about that.
I remember it used to be that a great day to go to Disneyland or Disney World was Christmas Eve on December 24th because most people were preparing for Christmas, and it was pretty much only the Jews who went to Disneyland and Disney World.
I don't know if that's still the case.
You don't think that's the case anymore?
I know in Florida it's definitely not the case. Uh-huh. And I've actually worked on the TV parades when they were live at Magic Kingdom, and I did not see that to be the case either of those days because we used to shoot two because they were live. One was for overseas, the armed forces, and also if it rained. So we would shoot one 3 days before and one on the day, and it was packed. The thing to look for is, first of all, go early in the morning.
Okay.
The earlier, the better. They have this thing called rope drop, which is kind of like the beginning of a marathon because people are leaping through. You don't have to do that. But try to get to the things that are known to be. And there are lots of websites to tell you about the attractions that are more likely to be busy. The other thing is there's little rules of thumb. If there's two parades, sometimes if you go during the first parade, it might be less because the younger kids are at that, you know, and they might not be at the later one. Like they're bringing back Main Street Electrical Parade sometimes if you go on attractions during the first. If you go on attractions just before closing sometimes, but I've been at Disneyland where that isn't the case, it's just getting really difficult. What I still find is people just don't want to get up. So getting in the park early helps a lot. The other thing that's really important to do is plan. And it's unfortunate that it's had to come to this because it used to be you'd go there and you say,
walk around.
And see, that's the thing to remember too is never make the Disney parks into a chore because then it's not going to be fun anymore. And I really work hard on making it, let's sit down and have coffee and look at people, you know, let's be in Fantasyland instead of zip through and just hit ride, because that sort of just takes a lot of the magic out of that too. Because even if a queue line is long, there's stuff to look at, and especially on some big ones like Indiana Jones, you know, they have a lot of cool stuff little things you go through. Those are kind of fun anyway. And in some ways, bypassing that takes a little of the fun out. There's the Expedition Everest at Disney Animal Kingdom in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing queue line. I mean, it recreates this whole expeditional thing, and it has rooms and offices. And if you get the Fast Pass, you miss some of that. Now, we've been talking about Fast Pass. They have these tickets where you can, well, they don't have the tickets now, they have bands. It's by the time I explain this, it may change. So just in general, there are, if you go on to the websites, they'll tell you how you can plan the attractions. And if you have a hotel reservation, you can reserve them. And you have to do that real strategically. You do it for some stuff, but not for everything, because you don't want to be robotic about it. I mean, that's the way I feel personally.
Right.
pick some of the meals you really want to do. And there's tons of great websites that tell you a lot of details. People put comments and things. Take them with a grain of salt, you know. But some of the sites you can get that from. Disney has several sites that give you step-by-step how to do that. To avoid disappointment with kids, especially when you if you want to go to a character meeting, you know, where you have breakfast or something, you got to reserve that early because they get very difficult to get in. I mean, it's like you're going to go see the Oscars. You just want to see princesses, but it's really difficult if you do it at the last minute. I mean, I've had friends call up on Christmas Day and say, "Is it going to be crowded to the park today? Can we get in?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea." "Well, it's our only day." "Well, then plan on sitting on a bench most of the time or getting on two or three things. And if you go in expecting that and not expecting to do the whole park and just take it like that, you'll be fine. Enjoy a nice beverage. You know, get a nice coffee. There's a Starbucks now. Thank you."
There's a Starbucks at Disney.
I love that.
What has the world come to?
You know what?
You know, you mentioned...
Even the big diehard fans love that there's a Starbucks there.
You know, you mentioned the Indiana Jones ride, and the last time I was on it, I noticed that there is a disclaimer when you're standing in line that says, you know, this is a fairly violent, turbulent ride or whatever, and if you're over 65 or have heart problems,
motion sickness,
yeah. Back problems, et cetera, avoid this ride. And I'm thinking to myself, Harrison Ford can't ride the Indiana Jones ride.
Well, that's probably true.
You know, the real Harrison Ford, the real Indiana Jones. Okay, so...
You know what? I have a little tip, too, about motion sickness, because I don't like spinning.
Yeah.
In fact, I go on the Roger Rabbit thing. I fight that thing not to spin.
Okay.
I do not spin.
What's your tip?
There are these bands you can put on your wrists. Actually, an Imagineer told me about this. My son has a big problem with car sickness. These bands, you buy them at, like, the drugstore. You put them on each wrist, and they do some kind of acupressure thing, and it actually relieves motion sickness and car sickness.
I'm still not getting in those teacups.
Well, I've gone in those and held those tight. However, the Alice in Wonderland ride, oh, I love that ride. I love that. My wife made me a cake made for my birthday because I love that so much. She had a custom-made cake to resemble that attraction with marzipan caterpillar cars. And to this day, I'm her slave.
When people get into the park, do they usually follow the same sort of pattern? I mean, do most people sort of peel off to the right and go to Tomorrowland first, or do they peel off to the left, or is it just random?
That's the school of thought, too, is that there was this general thinking that everyone started in Adventureland and went clockwise. So then there was like, oh, go counterclockwise and avoid that. But then if too many people are doing that, then it does just the opposite. And it also, you got to figure the time of the day.
Mm-hmm.
If you come in at a certain time, maybe people have already done that. You have to kind of decide, okay, what does everybody really want to do? What can some people live without? What is our fallback if this doesn't happen? Because you could occasionally, especially in Florida, you might get rain. Here there was some, but it's nothing like Florida. I mean,
sure.
You get it daily in the summertime.
Yeah.
Another thing to do is what we always would do when we would come on a vacation to is if you've got a room, go take a break in the afternoon if the park hours are long. You know, now, this time of year, the park hours aren't quite so long. But if it's summertime, you go in early, and then about lunchtime, you can eat there, but you can find tons of other places out or in your hotel. Take a nap, go to the pool, chill, and then go back. Because I see people just trudging along after, you know, 18 hours. And it's like, the kids are asleep. It's like, don't do this. You'll come back fresh. And it really does work. It seems counterproductive because you feel like, well, I'm wasting this time. I'm paying for this. But it isn't quality time if you're killing yourself to get in every attraction. Take it easy and enjoy it is probably the hardest thing to do in a Disney park because you're sort of programmed to get all that in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you
invested in it.
Well, especially since you're paying a lot of money for it now.
Right. So you do want to get all that in, but you have to manage the expectations based on when you're going. If you're going in the summer or during holidays, expect to be hot, but build in sanity clauses.
Now, I had a problem.
To quote the Marx Brothers.
I had a problem one time when I went, and I was cold. it was unseasonably cold. So you figure, okay, just go to one of the gift shops and buy a sweatshirt. But every sweatshirt had, you know, either Mickey Mouse or a princess or something. It's like there's no way to buy any kind of sweatshirt without looking incredibly gay. So what are they going to do about that? Huh?
Well, that gets back to me dressing as Cinderella.
Oh, I guess it does. We're talking about Disneyland on Hollywood and Levine, and we'll be back with more, including the behind the scenes and under the scenes of the Magic Kingdoms right after this. A lot of people don't realize, but at Disneyland and certainly at Disney World, underneath the Magic Kingdom, there is a labyrinth of tunnels. Talk a little bit about the tunnels that nobody sees.
Well, it's especially at Magic Kingdom in Florida. I don't know that Disneyland has much of that. It's mostly backstage areas. But Epcot has a bit of a tunnel in the future area in the front. But Magic Kingdom is actually the second floor of the surface there. The whole lake that you go around on the monorail or go across on the ferry boat is actually a man-made, woman and man-made lake, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And they dredged up all the earth out of that. And you got to remember, too, is this was all swampland. It's amazing what they built on swamp. I mean, they had pylons going way down in the ground.
Oh, I'm sure. Down to China, probably.
Incredible.
Yeah, right.
And those pylons are now where Shanghai is. Anyway. No, legal, don't tell me. There's a huge amount of earth that was drudged out of there. What they did was they took what would have been the first floor of the area that the Magic Kingdom land is on. They built a structure over that, put that earth over it, and that's what the Magic Kingdom is. It's actually a second level.
There's like an ant farm. The first level is like an ant farm, and then they put the park over it.
Kinda. They call it depending on who you ask, they call it the Utilidor. And uh-huh. They have people going. It's sort of Bondian. I mean, not quite as elaborately, you know,
but like Dr. No's Lair kind of thing.
But uh-huh. it's more parking garagey. I mean, it ain't fancy. There's nice. They've actually put a lot of nice artwork and they've made it really nice. But it's basically a cement structure of tunnels, and people drive by on Pargos. You know, and the reason for that was that the important thing of the parks is theme. You know, you want the whole idea of being on stage is you want everything to fit where it goes. So you want the food and the merchandise and the cast members and all that to just sort of come from nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to see trucks.
Right, and you
going
don't.
Into Fantasyland.
And
yeah.
The trucks are there, but you never see them because they're going into a sort of this embankment behind Magic Kingdom that leads down into the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And the cast members also can take vehicles to get there into the tunnel. And there's a cafeteria there, and you know, like a reading area, and all kinds of things, and so it's big. I mean, you got to walk all around. It's like walking around the Magic Kingdom.
Sure.
And there's one big dip that kind of goes under where the castle is, but I mean, it's super cool, and it is still in existence, and it kind of works in that way. You know, they can bring things, and there's a whole network of staircases that and elevators that go up to various places, and they tell you where. Now, I made a mistake once because I opened the wrong door once, and suddenly I was in Small World, and boats were going by. You know, and I resisted the temptation to, you know, start
to say get out,
turning
people.
My head, yeah. You know, and singing. but I mean, usually it's pretty easy to figure out. Where you should go and shouldn't go, and there are maps and things, but it's pretty amazing that they still do have something like this, and it does work because you don't want a person in one costume to be in a land where they don't.
Oh my God, no!
Because it would.
Oh my God, you know, there's a spaceman here in New Orleans.
It would cause motion sickness.
Yeah, so. It probably would. along those lines, What about park security? Now, I imagine there is like a NORAD center where there are hundreds, maybe thousands of cameras, that security cameras all around the park, in the various attractions. You probably can't go anywhere without being on some security camera. Is that correct?
Well, I think so, and I think that there's more than I know about, which I'm glad.
Uh-huh.
Because if I know and I'm just me, then
right,
that's probably not secure. But yeah, there is a well, there's a whole central area just for how the transportation runs. So they know where all the buses and the monorails. I mean, there are central areas for an enormous amount of things. In the Utilidor Tunnel, there used to be an area called, I think it was Studio D, where they originally had all the audio for the attractions. And believe it or not, because it opened in the 70s, it was on cartridges. It was on carts, like a radio station. So you'd have a Haunted Mansion cart that was put into the machine to play. I mean, that was replaced, but it took a while. So there are centralized areas for that. The other thing, and I looked at Disneyland, I didn't see as much of it. But in Florida, especially Orlando, there's lightning. And so if you look carefully at the buildings, everywhere at Walt Disney World, there are little lightning rods every few feet to catch that. I don't see that quite as much here because, I mean, we had a little bit recently, but it isn't as much of an issue. In Florida, there's a lot of storms, a lot of lightning. There's also, and I do think they have these here, there's also like water disbursement things for fireworks, so that everything's nice. So yeah, a lot of that stuff is very, very carefully. They want to make sure people feel good because the funny thing about this is I don't think even Walt Disney realized what his parks were going to end up being to people. I mean, his idea was it was going to be this place where young and old could share these adventures together and not dad sits in a chair and watches his daughters on the rides,
right,
like he did at Griffith Park. So I think it's not only a rite of passage, which has become with a lot of people. Oh, well, the kids are this age, we got to take them. It's not just that either. It's become that we're kind of in this society now where not only do we want a self-contained world that we feel we can deal with, you know, and then the park, it's that world, it's contained, and you can kind of get your head wrapped around it.
Right.
But it's also a place when you go on these vacations where everybody's so busy. You know, we're literally scheduling, you know, when we have game night, when we watch this movie, when we're going here, when we're going there. And everybody is off doing things where it's a very active life that families have. When you go on this vacation, even though you may pick different attractions to go on, you're all put together in this thing together. And it's not as common as it used to be, you know?
It's getting harder and harder for the family unit to stay together. I'm sure now everybody is standing in line. They're looking at their cell phones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's,
yeah. We didn't used to do that. I mean, you know, now at least you can entertain yourself when you're standing in those lines. Do they still do grad night at Disneyland and Disney World?
I don't think they do it at Disney World anymore. I'm not sure about Disneyland.
Grad night was in Los Angeles when you graduated high school in June. There was one night when the park was open from midnight to 6, and graduates from all the different high schools would come, and you had to be nicely dressed and jacket and tie and a dress and, you know, all kinds of shenanigans went on there, which brings me back to the security cameras and some of the things that they must have collected over the years. How many babies were born as a result of grad night?
Well, there were unofficial proposals a lot, too, in the parks before they brought in the Disney weddings thing. The Disney weddings thing only happened in the early 90s, but there were all kinds.
Are there Disney divorces?
There's not that.
Cruella DeVille and Captain Hook and people like that oversee it?
I'm never going to say never because who knows? There's also no Forest Lawn equivalent of like Disney.
So we don't look at there's Bambi's mother things like that.
No. See, I think at least right now that's tasteless. We don't know what's going to be tasteless though, because the threshold of tasteless, as we've seen, has changed.
Oh, it's changed over this podcast.
So I don't know, but they have they're all kinds of things like that. They have a lot of events now. And that's the other reason why it's hard to know is it going to be busy or not. Because what they do is, first of all, if you see ads, like online ads or things, for special ticket rates or special resort rates, that's a little indicator that they're just like an airplane. They're trying to fill because it's not as busy. That's a little clue.
Right.
However, you know, you got annual pass holders, you have residents. So they're going to be in the parks when they're not as busy. The other thing is and they're tiering tickets now. So you can buy different levels of, you pay less on a day that is traditionally not as busy or not projected to be as busy, like an airplane seat.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, flying on a Wednesday instead of a Friday.
Right.
So they're tiering tickets. The other thing to keep in mind is that when you plan and like I said, you've got to be resourceful. If you plan and then suddenly the high school, you know, marching team has come in because they're doing an event, you got to plan around that. You know, here you got two parks. So you plan which park you go, which park you don't. Same thing, there's four in Florida. They have extra magic hours sometimes where they'll open earlier if you're staying in a hotel or stay open later. You can find all of that stuff out on the internet. There's also special events. They had one here for the holidays where they had these food markets where you get different kinds of food. They're having a lot of those kind of festivals now. Epcot has become like the capital for that. The food and wine, they just started an art festival. They have the Flower and Garden Festival, which also has food. So that's another way they're bringing in people.
Well, one change certainly from years past is that I think there are places now where you can go in Disneyland and Disney World where you can get alcohol.
I don't know that Disneyland has made that move yet because that was one of the Walt things.
Yeah, but I heard that there is like
beer
one restaurant or something where you can get
beer. Be Our Guest, I think, might be the one because it's Be Our Guest and that's the theme. I think that may have been the first exception, but in general, the Magic Kingdom and Disneyland's policy has not been that because that's the Walt.
People get rowdy.
And it does have. I mean, I have been at other parks that are not Disney parks on some nights and you see things going on, you know, just that attitude of stuff. There is a risk involved with that, but the other parks do serve it. I mean, Epcot has a food and wine festival, so they do serve, but not so much the hard stuff. But
what's the most popular attraction?
You mean of all time?
Well, currently. I mean, is it Space Mountain? Is it Pirates of the Caribbean? Is it the Mr. Toad ride? I mean, what is probably the number one attraction? What's the ride that everybody wants to go on now?
Well, I would say Space Mountain as far as thrill attractions. But you know what? You try getting into Peter Pan. I don't know what it is about that, but it's...
Yeah, me neither, because it's like a three-minute ride.
I know. But those ones tend to be any of what they used to call an E-attraction, any of the big, you know, Everest that I mentioned before.
Matterhorn.
Those kind of ones tend to be... those are the ones they have more of the fast pass and reservation things for, you know. But then Dumbo in Florida, they had to build two of them, two flying Dumbo attractions, and they built this huge waiting area that's like a circus tent, just so you could go, which is a great idea, just so you could go into air conditioning like in the summer.
Oh yeah,
and you get a reservation time, or they, you know, you get, it's like going to a restaurant. You get this little glowy thing, and then your Dumbo is ready. You know, and then you get into a shorter line and you go. And that's not even with a fast pass. That's just coping with the Dumbo attraction because so many people want to do it.
They do a really great job, and they've certainly done tremendous studies to make sure that the lines move as quickly as possible, that things are handled as efficiently as possible. I think a lot of time and effort has gone into that, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I will also tell you that they read the letters. They have departments. specifically, but the people read each letter and they stamp it that it's been read. They route it to where it needs. In my job, and I was writing advertising, occasionally I'd get a letter, you know, we thought you'd know this, you know, and that kind of thing. And usually I'd follow up on it, or I'd find out who would know. If you have a comment, you know, and you write it, it isn't tossed into the trash. You know, it isn't. You might get a form letter back. Doesn't mean you're going to get a picture of Mickey or, you know, or anything like that. But you will get some sort of response, because there are specific departments that have their own, like the resort area has their own and that kind of stuff, just to look at those messages. So they do take all that seriously. And the fact is, it would be really dumb not to be monitoring what people think, because why would you not want to know? You know, I read all the sites, even the sort of crackpot ones that are just don't, you know, you read it and it's like, this is just so not true. But you got to know what's going out there, because it's going out into the ether. You got to know what's being said. And that's kind of realism. So, you know.
The young ladies who play the princesses, who are Pocahontas and Belle and Cinderella and Snow White. That was going to be my next question. But they have to have people guarding them all the time, because aren't guys groping them? And, I mean, like, unless you know, security is hovering over those girls, I mean, it's like a Snickers bar in a fat farm.
I honestly, and all the years I've been in, you know, involved with parades or character appearances, I've never seen anything like that happen. There is an implied feeling of, this is Disney and I better be good. There are people who misbehave. You can't stop that. But in general, the general feeling is somehow Disney has control of things and I better, you know, who knows what might happen. So, I have never seen any incident happen at all. I don't know that they don't, but I have never seen it. Also, every single time a character goes out, they have a character, they used to call the character lead. I don't know what they're called now, but there's always a person who is there, because they're only can be out so long. The character can't be the one who says, I gotta go.
Yeah, they can't talk.
Especially if they don't talk.
Yeah, and those suits have to be just so hot.
Well,
cumbersome.
The earlier ones were more so. They've actually lightened them, and they you know, when you look at the Disney costuming and how accurate they are, you know, it's astonishing, because when you sometimes see characters done elsewhere, and I'm not knocking any other, but you know, where the eye holes go and stuff like that, and you look at the early Disney costumes, you know, where you had Winnie the Pooh had a big honey pot on his head and stuff, and it was like, oh my gosh, you see how far they've come. They are made of much lighter materials, but they still don't have them out too long, especially in the heat. And that's what that person is there for. The person is for
crowd control. So is it like tag team? Are there like seven Winnie the Poohs? Or if you're just a character guy, it's like you're Winnie the Pooh for an hour, then you take a break, and now you're Pinocchio like that.
They're all real. You know,
They are all real.
And
sorry.
What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Because, you know, no, they can't be everywhere, because there's only one. They actually put Moana on an airplane and fly her from the east to the west coast. Back and forth throughout the day.
Boy.
For each appearance. The characters are they have to be very versatile, you know, the performers in the park. I actually interviewed a lady named Carrie Butler, who is a huge Disney fan, and she's a Tony nominated Broadway star. She was in Xanadu, and she was in Beauty and the Beast. She's in a show now, and I got to know her, because she's an annual pass holder, and they live in New York, and they would just come down on a whim and just come for the weekend. Mm-hmm. She said, we do 8 shows a week. You've got people that are doing 8 shows a day. Uh-huh. You know, the talent, I got to know actors who, a lot of them from improv, you know, it's like that attitude of, well, they're theme park employees. Well, no, these people are.
It's Steve Martin worked at Disneyland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you read his book, it's very touching, because he it was the home, and the closeness he wasn't getting at home.
Right.
When he wore it was really, and it's like, gee, and the Magic Store is still there. That's so cool. I also saw a Xerox of Robert Redford's rejected application for a job at Disneyland. I think they put too ugly or something, you know. But the degree of talent involved, you know, you've got people who perform one thing, but then you've got people who do musicals and they do several of them a day. And then you got people who will do parades in any kind of weather and do the smiley dancey thing. And some of them do several of those kind of shows, you know, and they have so much versatility. And sometimes, I mean, we would work with people and it'd be astonishing what you could throw at them and then what they could do with it and how fast they were and how they could be funny and still be sort of Disney funny, but not be cutesy. You know, I've done comedy films and stuff or videos with these folks. And it's like, you'd throw it. And so it isn't just, oh, well, they're in a park. They have a lot of people, especially in Florida, hundreds of these people. And they have like people on the streets playing roles. That like at Hollywood Studios, they have the mayor and they have the young hopeful and things like that. And then the cool thing at Disneyland is that the characters almost seem to be hanging out. You know, that's what my kids love about Disneyland is there's an intimacy there. So you just walk by and it's like, oh yeah, there's Sleeping Beauty's just, you know, just walking by. And that's the fun part of it.
They don't do that in Florida?
Well, it's bigger. Everything is bigger. Oh. They do come out to different things, but as far as like princesses, that's, you know, that there's specific places where you go to find them. You can find them on occasion, but for the characters that are really like the Frozen princesses and stuff,
ooh,
it's either got to be a breakfast or a dinner, or it's got to be you get into a specific princess area where you wait for them, and it's beautifully designed.
Wow, no, not Disneyland. They just kind of hang out. Final question: is it fun to work at one of those ballparks, one of those theme parks? Is it fun? I mean, is it kind of a cool summer job?
Oh, or, I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
It seemed to be. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought, man, it'd be just so cool to work at Disneyland.
It is. You know, when people ask me what's it like to work for Disney, and I wasn't a park cast member. I mean, I worked in different office kind of settings, but I did go into the parks, and I've known a lot of those folks, and many of them have been there for generations. I mean, long time.
Uh-huh.
Disney is something very unique. If you're going to go in there thinking it's going to be something other than what it is, it's not going to be, so you probably won't like it. It has a culture, and there, you definitely get this is what it takes to be here. It has its politics. When people say, what's it like to work there? I usually say it's like the Emerald City. Good witches, bad witches, except you can't always tell.
I saw an older gentleman, and he was picking up trash, and then I looked closer, and he was like a former writer for Taxi. It was very sad. Craig, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'll see you at the happiest place on earth.
I've got trash to pick up.
Okay.
Your dreams come true.
And that will do it for this edition of Hollywood and Levine, Episode 7. Our thanks to Greg Airbar, also to Adam and Susie Meister, and to Howard Hoffman, and to you guys for listening. A program reminder, I will be doing my bitchy, snarky Oscar review only on this podcast. There'll be a special edition of it that will drop on the day after the ceremony. So tune in that Monday morning to get my sagacious opinions on the Academy Awards. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe. If you see it in your heart to give me a 5-star review, that would be appreciated. And I will see you next time. Bye-bye.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.